Economic dimensions of crop modelling. Philip, come on up.
Thank you very much, Ken, and thank you very much also to Joe. It's a pleasure and an honour to be here today. I'm going to talk briefly about three things: crop models and decision making, something about integrating crop models with other kinds of models, and just a very brief overview of where we've got to, and then something about what needs to be done in the future. And then I'll intersperse these with a few photos from the archives and a couple of comments about, if you like, it's sort of Jim Jones' characterization or characteristics, that or some of his outstanding characteristics. The next two slides, these are some, Jim has said many very wise things in his life, and these are a couple of slides that are really from him. The idea of trying to, I guess for probably most of his career, trying to get crop modelling into the broader contexts, so information needs in a systems approach. And of course what that means is we have to have understanding of the system so that we can do predictions and then control and manage the system. And so one of the big things that's been exercising many of us for many years is how can we get models and model outputs really to inform the decision-making process. And this is one of Jim's, probably modelling 101 actually. But I really like this because there are two loops here. There's the research for understanding loop. So you do research, you develop your model, you test your predictions, and then you go round and round and trying to get better understanding of how the system works. But then at some stage, moving it on to another circle on the right-hand side of the slide, to model, to application, to control and management. And so you have these two circles that are going around. And then, of course, this has already been mentioned, and I'm sure many of you will recognise this. This is actually version 3.5, so this is quite a late version of DSET. But to my mind, this is one of Jim's greatest achievements. And it's not only crop models, but it was much more than crop models. It's looking at how you can organise the data, how you can organise the weather and soils information, how you can analyse, and a whole range of tools that really take crop models and put them in this broader context. And actually, this is Jim Jones' characteristic number one that I want to mention, and that's longevity. Not in the trivial sense of lots of time, but sort of Jim's amazing performance at very high levels of scientific excellence. And he was instrumental in getting the DSAC going. As you can see, version 2.1 came out in 1989. By the way, I've always wanted to ask what was version 1. I can't imagine what that might have looked like. But 22 years later, we're still going, and with many, many hundreds of users in many countries. And then how can crop models be applied? Well, I've just put a little matrix here. So you have what you might call very roughly biophysical analysis, agricultural systems analysis, and then intersected by in the research domain and the real world, and then some examples of the types of applications. And there are many examples of these. This is a very simple one. This is actually some work from quite a long time ago, but merely plotting nitrogen fertilizer applied against mean gross margin or net return, so dollars per hectare. And the idea being that this is for one site with many different nitrogen fertilizer strategies and many different weather years. And again, the point being with a model, it's a tool to be able to enable you to say something about what your optimum rates of fertilizer application may be for these particular sets of conditions. And then, of course, starting to get more into the decision-making domain, you can then plot the variance of those gross returns or the net returns along the bottom and the y-axis, and then the mean returns, and you have a sort of a frontier along which you may move. And of course you can get more gross margin, but of course the big trade-off is that the variability increases And so understanding the nature of this trade-off between more profit and but more variability is something that the models are very good at. And just another example on yield forecasting. So again, these show the blue lines are the means and the standard deviation of your estimated yields for four different varieties of maize. And so, of course, as your forecast date moves through the season, as you replace unknown weather with more and more known weather, then, of course, your variation around the actual yield will decrease. And so these are very powerful tools, crop models, and there are many things that we can do with them. And there's more things that we can do with them once we start to integrate them with different types of tools. And that's the second thing I want to say. And this is another photo from the archive. So this is Jim Jones' characteristic number two. Sort of a lifelong commitment to interdisciplinarity and multidisciplinarity. And some of you may recognize in the middle that's Barry Dent that Joe mentioned. So he was one of the UK gurus of agricultural systems science, but very much from the economics or farm management perspective. And so Jim's willingness and endeavour to work with people from many different perspectives, and of course his wife Jean on the right. And there were some of us who would say that actually the ultimate interdisciplinary challenge is probably marriage. But that's something which Jim and Jean excel at also. So integrating crop models with socio-economic models, the reason I think we need to do this oftentimes is just because of the complexity of the problems that we're facing. So there are all kinds of issues associated with policy, technology options. We need to balance environmental sustainability, food security, and human well-being. So how can we do these things? Well, one way that can help is through linking different types of models together. So we can evaluate not only a wide range of alternatives, but different types of models being able to produce different types of outputs, hopefully in response to sort of coherent sets of input data. So this integration can be very useful. But of course, integration at different sort of scales, if you like. There's spatial integration from plot up to landscape, or systems integration, so that's where you start to incorporate not only the biophysical, but the economics and the policy and the socio-cultural and so on. And just a very simple example, this is some recent work we've been doing looking at households and how farmers have already adapted their crop and livestock management over the last 20 years, and also how they might modify their livelihood strategies in the future to meet their goals. And this shows an area around Lake Victoria in East Africa, and you may be able to see little dots. These are households that, or clusters of households that we've been talking to. And this is involving quite simple crop modelling, and then feeding those results into a household linear programming model and going round the loop a couple of times. And all these places are actually traditional livestock keeping areas. And actually, we've arranged them on the right-hand side. These are the name of the sites, but this is the gradient of rainfall from lowest in Samburu up to Machakos in Kenya, with relatively high amounts of rainfall. But these are all traditional livestock keeping areas. But you can see this shows the history of cropping. So in some of these, particularly in the wetter areas, many of these places have quite a long tradition of cropping, whereas at the top in Samburu, they're still not cropping at all, or they may be in Baringo, they've only been cropping for 20 years. So you can see that already, in response to all kinds of drivers of change, farmers are changing their management. And so this work is still in progress, but using the crop models to simulate current and future conditions, using a livestock model to look at simulating meat and milk production in relation to current and future diets, and then just trying to bring it together in a household linear programming framework to look at income and food security ratios and self-sufficiency ratios. And again, these are a sort of sequence of models that can be very powerful for providing information that's of use. Another example, this is sort of a higher level of sort of spatial organization, if you like, is a global study. This is some work done by Jerry Nelson at IFPRI with the impact, IFPRI's impact model. And again, using crop models, so to estimate the production response of different types of conditions. So for all the cropping land on the globe, running a crop model, so using weather data, using crop, using management data, and so on and so forth, and then pulling all that information into a IFPRI's impact model, and then the idea being to then use to look at some of the impacts of future changes here, future changes in climate. So an example showing that the climate effect over the next 40 years is projected to be quite substantial. In terms of price increases that people are having to pay for maize, rice and wheat. So third, what about the future? This photo, I think, illustrates the Jim Jones characteristic number three. And that's Jim has always manifested very light leadership, but always been extremely effective. This is this was a very small workshop we had in Kenya, but I think this was 2000, and we were trying to come to grips with the idea of how can you integrate crop models and livestock models into a sort of a biophysical framework so that you could actually look at some of the interactions, some of the key interactions between crops and livestock. And of these six people, it's very nice that four of us are in the room, but all six of us are still working on, in many ways, very similar sorts of issues, and obviously there's still huge amounts to be done. But Jim's leadership has always been extremely important. So there's just a couple of things I want to highlight in terms of the future, and one is really trying to fully implement a systems approach, especially at the household level. And as I just hinted, this idea about, particularly in developing country household systems, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa or South Asia, then livestock and crops, they're both extremely important livelihood options within households. And so we really need to understand a lot about some of the interactions between them. And so there's still quite a lot to be done in terms of really getting to grips with some of these, and how can we biophysically represent some of these linkages at the household level. And so we need to implement a systems approach, not only really to understand current conditions, but particularly understanding the likely or possible impacts of global change. So it's not only climate change, which is obviously important, but in many parts of the developing world, there's large increases in population, and the massive movements often in many countries from the rural areas to the cities, and demographics are changing quite rapidly. And socio-cultural change in many of these countries is very, often very large. And so understanding how some of these drivers are playing out at the household level then becomes very important. And the second issue is really the thing about data. And particularly in a developing country context, there's huge amounts of systems characterization data that we lack just for basic information about what's happening on the ground that could then be translated into data products for analysis and modelling. And there are many examples I could show, but this is one on just the sort of the basic, how much cropland is there in Africa? And this shows the estimates from various remotely sensed products compared with national statistics on the left. So that's from FileStat. And so you can see the estimates vary by a factor of three. And this, you might well think that this is such a basic piece of information, but we don't actually know how much cropland there is in Africa. And so there are certainly efforts to try to address this issue by providing or by coming up with hybrid maps that can help us get better estimates. But this highlights a key problem. And also at the household system level, there's a lot of, this is shows system calendars for a household in Ghana. And this kind of information is extremely useful because it helps to characterize the type of household, and so maybe through modeling, identifying a place where interventions could usefully be done. So this shows the cropping calendar and the feeding calendar for the livestock and the family's nutrition through the various months of the year and the demands for cash. And you can see, and this is a real household, and so there are months of the year where this household is food secure, but there are other months of the year when there's energy deficit or an energy and protein deficit. And trying to get this kind of information for a large number of households is something that we're starting to do within CCAFS and with other partners. But this is very, in a sense, it's very basic information, just trying to understand what's already there, so that hopefully this will give us a better idea of how interventions can be made more effective in the future. And so to finalise, well, what's the outlook? I think there are various things that are happening. The continuing development of tools for studying biophysical systems that address many of the complexities and the interrelationships. There's lots of work going on there. And particularly increasing the efforts to understand these coupled biophysical socioeconomic systems, because, of course, they're not separate, but they interact so that we can identify much better what works where and why. And then finding synergies and pooling collaborative efforts on data and tools, and this is a critical thing. So clearly there's a lot of work. But basically the outlook looks to be quite good. But then on the other hand, that's just as well, because the challenges that we're facing, not only in the developing world but in the developed world, in terms of trying to balance these issues of sustainability and food security and incomes, the challenges are extremely severe. And then just to say, this is Jim Jones' characteristic number 4. And that's Jim's ability over a long period of time to build great strength in teams. And this is actually from the dying days of the IBSNAT project in Hawaii. So whether the team was IBSNAT or it was DSAT, ICASA or AGMIP or others, Jim's always been able to somehow sort of cement very strong teams, and there's been considerable strength to many of those. So to conclude, Jim, we know that you haven't really retired at all, but this is a great opportunity to reflect on the huge influence that you have had and you continue to have, and your great contribution to agricultural science. I think I could speak for many in the room in saying that we've been very privileged to work with you and to be associated with you. And from my own perspective, long may it continue.